40 hours into our 48 hour Build Digital live stream. So naturally, it's time to talk about one of our easier subjects, apparently, and that's quantum computing. So please welcome Anita Ramanan to the Build Digital live feed. Anita, it's so great to see you.
Hey, you too. It's great to be live, as you say, 40 hours in.
I know, right? We're all here. We're also going. The production team's doing like the best job ever. So, but what we want to hear about is we want to hear a bit about quantum computing. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do at Microsoft, Anita?
Sure. So I'm a quantum software engineer in the Microsoft Quantum Product Group. So we're busy building out everything from hardware to the software that you need and the tools that you need to actually run code on that hardware, through to actual solutions that we're building today using something called quantum-inspired optimization. And that's really where my day job focuses, is on these quantum-inspired methods, which enable us to emulate quantum effects using classical hardware. And that can actually enable us to find speed up or perhaps better optima for certain kind of highly complex optimization problems.
Gosh, okay, so we're straight in. So how about we level set a little bit? So Anita, can you tell us truly the basics of quantum so that we can get everyone on the same level?
Sure, yeah. So quantum computing is a kind of fundamentally different paradigm of computing to a classical machine. So, I mean, whereas with a classical machine, you have your information is stored in bits, in binary digits, which can be either zero or one at any one time. A qubit, a quantum bit, can be, this is where you usually hear, both zero and one at the same time. It's a little bit more complicated than that. A qubit can exist in something called a superposition, which is like a probabilistic ensemble of both zero and one. But this enables us to work with information in ways that a classical machine never could, because we're able to perform operations on these qubits whilst they're in this superposed state, this probabilistic distribution. Which is obviously not something that a classical machine could ever achieve. So we can use this principle of superposition, along with other kind of quantum principles, such as things like entanglement, which Einstein famously called spooky action at a distance, which is a kind of weird phenomenon where you can take two quantum particles and entangle them somehow. And then separate them to literally the ends of the universe. And if I perform a measurement on one of the particles and collapse it to one, you know, either a zero or a one, the other one instantaneously, that's still entangled, will assume the correlated state. So let's say if I see one, the other person will see zero, which is really spooky. And kind of, you know, even Einstein wasn't very impressed at this whole, like, doesn't this seem to break the speed of light? You know, can we communicate faster than light? What's going on here? You can't. We haven't quite broken the speed of light in physics just yet. There's no communication that's actually kind of been passed between these qubits. We couldn't use it to send information because you would break that entanglement. So physics still holds, but we can make use of this to do computations in ways that we could never do before. Now we can build these qubits out of any number of quantum systems. These could be something like an ion, which is just a charged particle. We can build them out of photons, which are light particles. We can build them, Microsoft's approach is called a topological qubit. So these seek to encode information in the overall kind of topological property of a state of matter rather than in the state of an individual particle, like an ion, for example. So we're aiming to build out this kind of more robust, less error-prone qubit, because the reason that we don't really have qubits on a large scale today is quantum computers on a large scale today is that they're very, very susceptible to noise. And it's really, really hard for us to actually isolate them well enough to keep them in this nice superposed entangled quantum state for long enough to actually do useful computation. And that's because they interact with the environment, you know, cosmic rays that you just can't shield from, any kind of heat, vibration, any of these things can cause our quantum states to lose their nice quantum properties. And this can make it, this makes it really difficult for us to build large scale machines. So we use error correction to fix these problems when they do interact. But then you need many more error correction qubits to compensate per single kind of logical qubit, and the problem kind of expands, as you might imagine. So the idea behind our topological qubit is that they'll be naturally less prone to error because they're encoding, we're encoding information in what's known as a topological state. Sorry, it's a little bit complicated, but
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. This is the kind of, I think, as with any area of technology, we need to get used to the language that's being used in the space and understand from its grassroots, like what is happening underneath the technology, even if in the future we have a chance to build at a very slightly higher level. I have seen, so this is to the audience, I've seen Anita speak on quantum a few times, amazing sessions. It was only one recently where I, probably for the fourth time, where Anita, you shared some amazing examples and kind of solutions that relate to quantum. And that's kind of where I suddenly clicked, I like got it. Can you share some of them with our audience?
Sure. So I think I'll pick out two today. So the first one is kind of like, is something that a lot of people are scared about when quantum computers come into being, but shouldn't necessarily be. And the other one is all around quantum simulation. So I'll look at that one second. But the first one is about, so a lot of people ask me, isn't quantum computing going to break RSA encryption? And the answer is yes. Whereas, you know, so breaking something like an RSA 248 key, cracking something like an RSA 248 key using a classical machine would take a billion years or so by brute force, a quantum computer is exponentially more efficient at basically factorizing large numbers into its components. And this obviously poses a problem for RSA, but a quantum computer could potentially do this in, you know, the order of hundreds of seconds, which is a problem if your secrets are valuable for more than hundreds of seconds at a time, which is probably most of the things on the internet. So, you know, this poses a problem. Not yet, because as I say, quantum computers aren't yet at a scale that would be kind of able to do anything particularly large, you know, crack a large key. I think we can crack like the number 15. So we're ways off that, but it poses a threat for the future, and it's something that we need to be thinking about now. So there's a couple of ways that we're looking to tackle this. The first is there are methods of actually encrypting your information using keys that you exchange via a quantum communication path. And now, due to a few kind of core tenets of quantum mechanics, you're not able to copy a stream of quantum information. So you have to be listening in directly to the stream. So if I'm sending you a key, you'd have to be listening into that exact stream. And because of that whole superposition thing, and when you take a measurement, it affects the state of the quantum information that you're sending. This basically enables us to tell every time if someone has actually listened in on our communications. So we can securely send keys and then use those keys to encrypt our information. The other way is something that we have a whole team here at Microsoft focused on building, which is called post-quantum cryptography methods. So these are methods, they're classical methods that we can run using our computers today, but that don't rely on the fact that large numbers are difficult to factorize for a classical machine. They rely on other ways of encrypting our information. So there's a big call for papers out from the National Institute for Standards and Technology, and they are kind of whittling down the final solutions till we have a kind of an industry standard that we can then go ahead and implement way ahead of time. So that's not something we should be too worried about, because there are fixes in place. The other story is around something called nitrogenase, which the story kind of revolves around fertilizer. So something like 1% of the global energy production every single year goes into producing ammonia, which is used to fertilize the fields to keep us all healthy and eating and alive, you know, slightly important. But the reason why it uses so much energy is because in order to take atmospheric nitrogen, which is really strongly bonded, it's two nitrogen atoms with a triple bond, and pulling those apart to produce ammonia is really, really hard to do. So we need a high energy, it needs to be at a high temperature and at a high pressure in order for us to actually generate ammonia. So if we could, you know, make this more efficient, we could make, you know, huge savings in terms of global warming. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately for us, there is a naturally occurring enzyme called nitrogenase, and this allows us to actually do this at room temperature and pressure. But the thing that makes it work, the active site, is very, very hard to simulate using a classical machine. The electrons move in kind of particular or interact in very kind of strongly correlated ways, which a quantum machine, because it's based on the same principles, would be much better placed to simulate. So hopefully, when we have quantum machines at scale, we'll be able to use those to actually tackle these problems. For example, producing fertilizer at room temperature and pressure, and hopefully chopping a bit off of our carbon emissions in the process.
Nice. And actually, we've heard a lot about green and responsibility over the space of Build. So it's nice to see that all these different things actually coming together. And again, you know, the examples personally for me made it a little bit better to kind of understand, right, like, where am I going to see this in my life sort of thing? We only have a fraction of time with Anita. It's never long enough whenever I speak to Anita. So I guess, Anita, you actually have a session, right, in about an hour and a half. So 1:30 p.m. British summer time. And mm-hmm. What are you going to be sharing in there that we've maybe not covered here?
Yeah, so this is kind of been a bit of a preamble for that. The session later will focus on what you as a developer can actually do today. We've announced Azure Quantum, and that will be reaching public preview at some point later in the year. So it's a kind of kickstarter on what it is, what people are doing with it, what our partners are doing with it already, and how you can get started today so that you can start running algorithms against real quantum hardware in the Azure cloud.
Fantastic. And just to let you know, Anita, we've actually been running a live poll while she's been speaking, and we just wanted to know where people were in their quantum journey. And so just take a quick look on my screen over here. 44% said they haven't had time yet. Well, if you're here with us now, can you be here with us in an hour and 30 minutes? Because then you can learn even more from Anita, which is great. And then actually 1% of people are an absolute pro. And if I'm probably right, that might be Francis in the background there, who is your coworker, Anita.
Yeah, no, Francis is great. And actually, she's been working really hard to build out some Microsoft Learn modules around the whole Azure Quantum, quantum computing, how to get started with quantum-inspired methods as well. So definitely worth checking those out.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Anita. That's all we've got time for at the moment. And it's just about time for another digital breakout, this time with Darren Jefford, and he's going to be discussing AI-powered virtual agents. So go take a look.